from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday, and I'm Mike Pesca. The Yankees radio announcer John Sterling has never been accused of subtlety with every home run. It is high, it is far, it is gone. And every player has his own catchphrase, like an A-bomb from A-Rod. Some players have two catchphrases for each home run. The milkman delivers, that's the Milky Way. So as I was considering what was happening at the new Yankee Stadium, the fact that so many home runs are being hit, I figured out an explanation. Quite simply, it is this: God wants John Sterling to explode. I cannot vouch for the scientific rigor of the explanation or even the theological soundness. I do not believe in a vengeful God or one who seeks amusement via the combustion of a radio play-by-play man. But how else do you explain the fact that home runs are being hit at the new stadium as they've never been hit in a new stadium before? The Yankees told us that the ballpark's dimensions would be the same. They spent $1.5 billion making sure that shadows would hit the stadium the same way as they did in the old one. It seems like they took everything into account. Well, not everything. And joining me now are a few people who have even better theories than I do, than the John Sterling explosion conjecture, to explain what might be going on in the new Yankee Stadium. Greg Rabarchik is a reliability engineer for Xerox and the creator of Hit Tracker in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Greg.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, pleased to. Dennis Torok is the U.S. Business Development and Project Manager for Numerical Technologies International in Minneapolis. Hello, Dennis.
Hi, good afternoon, and glad to be on the show.
Good to have you. And Jonah Carey is a sports writer for ESPN.com, The Wall Street Journal, Sports Illustrated, and he's working on a book I'm excited to read about how the Tampa Bay Rays went from worst to first, and he's in Durham, New Hampshire today. Hey, Jonah.
How are you, Mike?
I'm well. So, Dennis, let's start with you. You are a wind expert, is this correct?
I'm a wind engineer. Basically, I work for Numerical Technologies, a Canadian company. And we are active in the area of computational wind engineering, which means the study of wind and how it flows around structures.
Right. So do stadiums hire you? And do you know if Yankee Stadium hired a wind guy such as yourself?
I know of the fact that obviously when they hire an architectural firm to design a stadium, that firm will then send out the information to a special company that mm-hmm. would do a wind study. And I was told that a wind study was done on Yankee Stadium.
From what you see, and this is one of the explanations, and we'll get to some of the other ones, but could wind be affecting balls in the new Yankee Stadium in a way that they hadn't anticipated, in a way that balls weren't affected in the old Yankee Stadium?
Yes, I believe that wind could be one of the factors that that might influence the flight trajectory of the baseball. And basically, I think if you compare the two stadiums, the new Yankee and the old Yankee Stadium, there's a slight difference I can see in the overall alignment of the ballpark. In other words, the direction from home plate to right field.
Mm-hmm.
It looks to me, and again, this is from sketches on the on websites, is that the home plate to right field is aligned west to east in the new stadium,
mm-hmm.
west to east. In the old stadium, it was aligned somewhat northwest to southeast. It's about maybe a 20, 25 degrees variation. And winds coming out of the west, and this is the first thing that sparked my interest and also watching it on TV, the day that a lot of home runs were hit early part of the season, winds were coming from the west at approximately 15, 20 miles an hour. Winds from the west would flow over the stadium, and due to the shallowness of the grandstand seating, more shallow than that in old Yankee Stadium,
mm-hmm.
there was generally a direct path, or an unrestricted path for the winds to come down into the stadiums, pass over the field, and then have to leave in the right field sector.
A little bit of a jet stream.
A little bit of a jet, well, a little bit of a higher stream flow, not a jet stream, but
all right.
But the thing is, it's unimpeded. It doesn't have anything to break it up or cause swirls.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the old Yankee Stadium, the same west winds would not be directly focused on right field, they would pass more towards right center and center. So that high-speed sector in the right field area might not be affected by the west winds as much.
Got it. Now, let me bring in Greg Hrabarczyk, because you looked at winds, but you look at a lot of other factors.
Yes.
Greg, what are you finding? First of all, we are seeing more home runs, just if you count the number, but are we seeing home runs that we could say wouldn't be home runs in the old Yankee Stadium or another stadium?
Yeah, absolutely. So far this year, we've had 13 games in the new park, and there's been 47 home runs, or 3.6 per game, as compared to the first 13 games last year at the old stadium, where there were 24 home runs hit. And that's a statistically significant difference. So clearly there is something going on here. And, I'm going to defer to Dennis a little bit on the wind aspect of things and just focus on the dimensions of the stadium.
Now, before you started with the dimensions, the Yankees, they're so into tradition and legacy and history. They assured the fans the new ballpark would have the same dimensions. We're not going to screw with history and tradition, they said. But in reality, what's the case?
Well, they are a little bit different in between those places where they typically make those measurements. So down the line, the foul poles, same distance. If you go out to a point in left center field, a point in right center field, pretty much the same distances. But between those marks, you actually do have some very distinct differences. The old stadium in right field used to kind of go out a little bit sharper than the new stadium, and it has more of a dog leg shape to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the new park, they actually cut the right field fence directly across out towards right center and center field. So what you
it's less concave is what you're saying.
Yeah. You could think of it as a dog leg shape that has been cut off in the new stadium, and there's a number of reasons for that. It makes for a more even seating area. It allows you to put an out of town scoreboard on the right field wall, which they've done. But in terms of the actual distances from home plate, it's reduced the distance to the right field fence on average about 5.5 feet, and in places as much as 9 feet.
Now, that shorter fence in right field, and Yankee Stadium's famous for the shallow fence out and right there, but that shorter fence, is that the bulk of the home runs that we're seeing, the bulk of the difference of home runs?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Have already been something like 36 home runs have gone to right field out of the 47. And just looking at tracking those home runs the way I do at Hit Tracker, we've already seen 6 home runs hit in the new park that would not have made it out of the old park, strictly on a dimensional basis. They landed in that area that has been sort of cut off between the two parks.
And before I bring Joan in, let me give out the number. It's 1-800-989-TALK, 1-800-989-8255. Of course, tweet us with the @ followed by SciFry. Jonah Carey, before we get into your theories, which are interesting, take a step back. Why does this matter other than curiosity? In New York, for instance, for many days, the back pages of the newspapers where the sports section is was obsessed with the number of home runs at Yankee Stadium. Why does that matter to the baseball fan?
Well, first of all, you've got the issue of tradition. I mean, you go back with the Yankees, you've got Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle, and this is all important stuff. And, you know, there have already been enough things that have come up in baseball that threaten the records, or at least in fans and media's minds threaten the records, such as the use of performance-enhancing drugs, for instance. And so anything else that could potentially skew with that and can make us uncertain about what's going on is certainly a factor. And I think beyond that, when you look at what's happened with the Yankees, the stadium is almost the tip of the iceberg. I mean, of course, the Alex Rodriguez scandal is one. They got rid of their beloved manager, Joe Torre. They're off to a slow start this season. They've got holes on the field. There's all kinds of things going on over there. And this just is kind of the icing on the cake.
Right.
Not a very tasty cake right now.
So the Yankee fan who adheres to tradition, and that's what he has to hang on to, and the legends and Babe Ruth and Joe DiMaggio, this is the most tradition-bound fan in baseball. His whole world is crumbling apart, and the biggest insult to the injury is now there's a launching pad in the Bronx. So say the last two experts we talked to, but what do you say, Jonah?
I actually am going to respectfully disagree, despite the great credentials of both Dennis and Greg, and I especially enjoy Greg's website, Hit Tracker. I think it's terrific, and they do great work. But he mentioned a statistically significant difference. Well, to me, a statistically significant difference is just looking at park factors in general. And any stat head worth his salt will tell you that it usually takes 3 years, that's 243 home games, to come up with a proper park factor for a ballpark. You can have all sorts of statistics statistical noise that can come into play. For instance,
let's just take a park factor is how the ballpark affects things like home runs and the other things that are played, the physical dimensions of the ballpark and the physical layout of the ballpark.
That's correct, and it strips out the effect of something like bad pitchers, good hitters, all that stuff. You get an even reading of it. So, for instance, Coors Field in Colorado, they play a mile high. That's going to be a hitter's park. The ball flies out of there easier. You've got a lot of surface area for the ball to land in for singles and doubles. So that is a offensive park, whereas, let's say, San Diego and Seattle, those are considered pitcher-friendly parks. So, again, 3 years is what you usually use to come up with a park factor. There have been 13 games at Yankee Stadium so far. That's 5% out of 243. One of the games that significantly impacted the number of home runs and number of runs scored in that ballpark was I believe the score was 22-8, something to that effect, where the Yankees gave up, again, 20-plus runs. Well, the starting pitcher of that game was Chin Ming Wong. He might be completely broken as a pitcher right now. They brought in a relief pitcher named Claggett, who spent one game in the major leagues, went down to the minors. He may never pitch again in the majors. He's just not a talented pitcher. Those two guys combined to give up 16 or 17 runs.
Right.
When you have such a small sample size, these things can be skewed by such events.
This is true. Now, to interject, Chin Ming Wong, whose ERA currently affects the Tides, he only gave up one of the home runs, and then Claggett came in and gave up two of the home runs. Now, these are three out of the record-setting number of home runs.
Well, correct, but it certainly affects run scoring in general. I mean, I think we're talking about two things here, was run scoring and home runs. And I think the other thing to look at, again, is we can go back to any number of causes and effects. It could have been that the weather was unseasonably warm that way. There have been talks about that the ball is livelier in general, and so home runs, we know for a fact, are up all around Major League Baseball. Or it could just be one of those things, and I think as human beings, we have a hard time processing that. We go with a lot of confirmation bias, a lot of post-hoc reasoning. We say, well, I believe this to be true. Oh, look, this data supports what I think, therefore I'm going to believe it. Whereas with 13 games, you can't really do that. You have to look at the longer sample. It might be that Yankee Stadium turns out to be a home run haven like Coors Field East, but we just can't make that determination reliably so early in the game.
Greg Hrabarczyk, I'm sure you are aware of the fallacy of the small sample size, but why do you think what we've seen so far isn't a small sample size?
I think if all I had to look at was box scores, if I was trapped in a room somewhere and I just got newspapers shipped in to me, I would have to completely agree with Jonah that it would be way too soon to make a judgment like that. However, Hit Tracker allows me to get a little bit more information that gives me a little bit more confidence that what we're seeing is a real effect. First of all, just looking at the distances of the parks, that's a pretty unequivocal change that really can only go in one direction. I mean, when you move the fences in, it can't possibly do anything but increase your rate of home runs. So there's one piece of it. And if I look at the average home run distances hit across the league, around 399 feet, and if you look at the average home runs hit in Yankee Stadium, is about 385 feet. Second shortest in the whole league. I mean, clearly there's an element of the hitters taking advantage of those shorter fences. Okay, now, I don't necessarily think that at the end of the season that we'll be sitting at 3.6 home runs a game in the new stadium. I certainly agree with a lot of what Jonah brought up about you certainly have an element of this being some bad pitching or some pitchers who maybe don't belong in the major leagues and some element of luck. I mean, a lot of these home runs have barely cleared the fence, and that sort of thing is going to even out over time. However, I'm pretty confident that when you get to the end of the season, we are going to see that the new park allows more home runs than the old park. Exactly how many more, I don't think you can know that at this stage. And in terms of that, I do agree with Jonah that it's too soon to know just how much of a home run park it is, but I'm pretty confident that it is a home run park compared to the old one.
And I'm Mike Pesca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let me give out the number again. It's 1-800-989-TALK. And Jonah, before we throw that back at you, I want to bring in the win question, because Dennis Torok, you study win. You know, there's only been a few games here at Yankee Stadium. You know what sample size is. Is it too small a sample size to say that, you know, we just happen to see the windiest days and these are statistical aberrations?
Well, I think you have to look at, again, a large amount of historical data on wind. Now, that data is available. In other words, what you could do is go to the LaGuardia or JFK or any airport. You can obtain wind data for wind speed and direction for over 30 years. You take that 30 years data, which is 1 hour, which is 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You might have over 50,000, 60,000 data points. Now, statistically, That data can be reduced to give you an expected estimate of the frequencies that winds would come from the west or from the northwest or from any of the compass directions. Once you have that and the probability that the wind exceeds a certain speed, and I don't know, I took off the top of my head 12 miles an hour, which AccuWeather had mentioned wind speeds over 10 would be could be significant for for this effect. I found out that the new stadium will have winds from the west perhaps 20 to 25% more annually than in the old Yankee Stadium.
Right.
Which means that you would expect to see, I think, a significantly more number of days when they're playing ball that you might have a wind over 12 miles an hour.
And the Yankees know about this, and an executive with the Yankees, Lon Trost, has said there were wind studies performed before, there will be wind studies performed as we go forward, and we're just looking, like you are, to see whether or not it's the weather, the wind, what happens when the old building goes down. He also said that based on wind analysis and wind studies, the winds we're having were the least likely winds to occur, so maybe he's saying it was a small sample size. He is vowing that they'll look and analyze the winds, because the Yankees are saying that we don't want so many home runs in this park. A lot of people have been tweeting us that, you know, maybe there are so many home runs because this is what George Steinbrenner and the Steinbrenner family wants, because ticket sales haven't been going good, and there is this notion that, you know, more home runs draws more fans. If that's true, that hasn't been the case so far this year. Jonah, would you like to respond to everything that you've heard about why maybe this is a statistically significant sample size we're dealing with?
Well, there's a couple things going on we're looking at here, Mike. One is, and Greg talked about this, and I thought it was a great point. He mentioned, I believe he said 36 out of the 47 home runs hit at Yankee Stadium were by left-handed hitters. The Yankees are remarkably, abnormally left-handed this season. Two of their best power hitters, Alex Rodriguez, who I think everybody knows, and Xavier Nady, have been on the disabled list for all or most of the season. So that's one. So then you're looking at the rest of the lineup. Hideki Matsui's a left-handed hitter. Nick Swisher's a switch hitter who obviously bats more left-handed. Same with Mark Teixeira, Robinson Cano, Johnny Damon. These are all left-handed hitters. Ramiro Pena, he's a switch hitter. So you're looking at all these guys that are left-handed hitters. Damon in particular is off to a great start, has a bunch of home runs. Most of them are being pulled to right field.
You know what? I'm just going to take a short break for a second. We want to come back and continue hearing what you have to say about this. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Mike Pesca. You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. I'm Mike Pesca. We're talking this hour about baseball physics and stadium design. And before we took a break, we were speaking with Jonah Carey of ESPN.com and Sports Illustrated. And he was laying out his case why some of the effects of many home runs in Yankee Stadium might be due to things like they have a lefty-dominated lineup. What else, Jonah?
Certainly the lefty-dominated lineup is going to be one. I mean, we just mentioned the weirdness of small sample sizes in general. And I think another thing to look at, and this is not something, of course, I'm not a meteorological expert. That's a tough word to say. Expert, but what we've read about is the fact that basically when they're saying it's going to be spring and fall where the winds are the heaviest. So even with all this going on, it might die down in the summertime. And I'm sure Dennis could speak to that better than I can. But that's what the skinny is as well. And one other thing that I would add is, even if we go through all this, and even if it turns out that it's wrong, it's not small sample size noise, it's not left-handed hitting, it's not anything else, and it is a park that turns out to yield more home runs, what's wrong with that? I mean, I think that that's great. You know, Major League Baseball is built, it's not like the NBA or NHL where you have all these uniform playing surfaces and it's very boring and everything is exactly the same. Wrigley Field is very different than Yankee Stadium, which is different than Fenway Park, which is different than any other park. And I think that that is great variety, the spice of life. If it turns out that it's a bigger home run park than anything else, it shouldn't be a controversy. It should be cool. Diversity is what makes baseball.
You know, that's such an interesting point, because the whole trend in stadium designs, you know, the old parks like Wrigley and Fenway were quirky and had weird angles because they had to, you know, jam them into these city blocks where they didn't necessarily belong. So now the new trend is to sort of invent these weird quirks. Now we have a park which may very well have a quirk that wasn't invented, that just came about, and everyone's up in arms about it. It's sort of the inverse of exactly what we've been experiencing with stadium ballpark construction.
Absolutely, and again, I think that that goes to a little bit of the Yankee backlash, where the Yankees are just going to be the villains in baseball in general. They always have the highest payroll. By the way, lower payroll than last season, despite the fact that people were making a big deal about the fact that they signed three players for the GDP of a small island nation over the offseason. But you've got all that going on. You've got the fact that, you know, A-Rod and the PED issue and everything else. And I think that there's just a tendency to pile on. I think that's what we're seeing right now.
Well, Dennis, Jonah just did mention what happens when the seasons change. What happens when spring turns to summer, turns to fall? Do you have any idea how that will affect the wins then?
Yeah, I mean, you take this historical data, and you could break it up month by month, season by season. And if you do that, you end up, like I had mentioned before, that wind events in spring and early autumn might be about 25% more in the new stadium than in the old. However, if you look at the summer, which might be mid-May to late September, that type of range, the wind events may, in fact, decrease or at least remain equal. So during the summer months, you probably will not see any appreciable difference or attribute anything to excessive winds.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this can be done, again, taking over 30, 40 years of wind data and finding out what's the wind direction for each month of the year and collect it all and evaluate it. So he was correct, and it is correct, that they would expect to see less of these higher-speed wind events during the summer.
Dennis, in your experience, when they build a new stadium, do they tend to overlook wind? I mean, everyone obsesses about how far away the walls are, and they obsess about, you know, having a nice hitter's background, you know, a big swath of black in the outfield. But do they tend to overlook how important wind is?
I would, personally, I think they do. In other words...
And, of course, that's also a commercial for your business, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, but I'm trying to avoid that right now.
Right.
But, in fact... There are tools now capable of modeling the wind, comparing existing stadiums to new stadiums, building a virtual mathematical model of the entire stadium and the internal domain, model wind coming from all directions, and actually determine point by point, perhaps every foot in the horizontal, every foot in the vertical, to get the actual wind speeds at those locations for winds coming from different directions.
Hmm.
Now, you could do that once you have a design of a stadium on CAD or a model of the stadium in existence. You could do that, and if you see a comparison that you or if you see something that shows in one direction you might have excessive speeds, at that time, you can make a decision. Do I want to change the slope of the roof? Do I want to adjust this so that I break up some of the smoothly flowing wind patterns so that I get more of a chaos in the upper levels of the stadium,
mm-hmm.
so that I don't get a direct path or a direct flow path? All this can be done during preliminary design.
So the tools are out there. They're
the
just underused.
The tools are out there. They're becoming of use more now. But, for instance, in European companies and in Canada, most cities or many cities have actual wind codes to when they put new construction in the city for certain types of buildings, they require you to have a wind study done for pedestrian comfort at the low at ground level winds. And that's all this is. These are ground-level winds inside the stadium.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. Let's take a call now. David from Marion, Pennsylvania. Thanks for calling in to Science Friday.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
So far, the statistical talk has focused on the fact that the rate of home runs is statistically higher this year than it was last year at Yankee Stadium. But what I think the bigger question that should be asked, and I haven't heard addressed, is, what is the statistical rate of home runs at Yankee Stadium compared to other stadiums, particularly American League stadiums, this year compared to last year? Is there a statistical difference in the rate of home runs at Yankee Stadium versus other American League stadiums in particular because of the DH, or is there just more focus on Yankee Stadium because it's the Yankees or because it's a, you know, it's a new stadium?
Yeah. No, you're right.
I'd be interested to hear the answer, and I'll take that off the air if you don't mind.
Thank you, David. That is a necessary question to ask, and what about it, Greg Hrabarczyk?
Yeah, I can definitely address that one. The new Yankee Stadium is quite a bit out ahead in terms of the highest rate of home runs in 2009, 3.6 versus a league-wide average of about 2.1. And if you look at the old stadium last year, it was very close to average. It was about 1.98, and the league average was about 2.01. So the old stadium played pretty much equal to the league average, and the new park so far is playing far enough above league average that even with the small sample size, if you do some stats on it, it comes out as a significant difference.
What are the other stadiums that are statistical outliers in terms of being very easy to hit home runs?
Well, absolutely. The Rangers ballpark in Arlington is a very high rate of home runs there. Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia, which has also had some talk about wins being funneled through that stadium. That's a pretty high one in the National League. U.S. Cellular Field, where the White Sox play in Chicago, is also a pretty high rate of homers as well. So those are the usual suspects, and the new Yankee Stadium has not only jumped up equal to those, but so far is running out ahead.
And has Coors Field in the thin air in Denver, they've tried to combat what was historically a good hitter's park by using a humidor. Could you explain how that works?
Yeah, exactly. When they first started playing ball in the 90s at Coors Field, they had just a rash of home runs. They actually had more than 300 home runs hit there one season. And aside from the altitude, I mean, they did build the stadium larger dimensionally to try to compensate for the altitude. But as the theory goes, the dry air in Denver was causing the balls to get a little bit smaller, to shrink a little bit, and to become a little bit lighter, which both of which would tend to make the ball fly further when you hit it the same way. So after the 2001 season, prior to the 2002 season, they installed this humidor where they will store the baseballs for, as I understand it, at least 7 days in a 70-degree, 50% humidity environment to try to bring those balls closer to the specs of the actual Rawlings ball that Major League Baseball uses. Those are the same specs that they use at the factory, and the idea was to try to make sure that they're using a ball that is on par with everybody else in the league. And since that time, you didn't see an immediate drop in the home run rate, but since then it has actually come down to become a lot more fair stadium home run-wise. It's still a very good offensive park, because it is larger and there's a lot more ground for those outfielders to cover. But the home run rates have come down in Coors Field.
See, you say humidor. I say it's the prowess of Ubaldo Jimenez. But this is just my theory. So the point there, and I didn't really ever realize that, I thought they were just kind of making the balls a little soggier to counteract the effects of the thin air in Denver. They're just making the balls a little soggier so that they play like every other baseball in the league.
Exactly, or at least what you think would be every other baseball in the league. Most of the stadiums around the league are pretty similar in terms of the humidity that they experience, around 50 to 60% relative humidity. There's really only two stadiums where that's not true. Coors Field in Denver is one, and then the other one is Chase Field in Phoenix, Arizona. And I'm not sure what the Diamondbacks do in terms of baseball storage, but certainly that would be another place where having a humidor would probably make a lot of sense if they're not already doing it.
Also, that stadium has the option of closing the roof or opening the roof. How does that affect how the balls fly?
Well, certainly when you close the roof, you're going to close off any kind of wind that you're going to feel. And just to go back a little bit to what Dennis said earlier, to talk about some of the relative impacts of wind, and I also wanted to bring temperature into this. If you have a 10-mile-an-hour tailwind, when you hit a typical home run ball, it can add about 25 feet of distance to the flight of that ball. So that's pretty significant. So, and when we were talking earlier about Yankee Stadium, the higher winds in spring and then in fall, when you get into the middle of summer, those winds will die down, but the temperatures are going to come up a bit in Yankee Stadium, where so far they've been playing games in the 50s or maybe the low 60s. They start playing games in the 70s or even into the 80s. That's going to make the ball fly further. A 10-degree difference in temperature will put another 4 feet of flight on the ball. So when you get those warm days, that's where you're going to see the ball really go. And that goes a long way towards explaining why the Rangers ballpark sees a lot of home runs. They're always playing in very hot weather down there.
I'm Mike Pesca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Jonah, I wanted to ask you this. You know, the Red Sox know how to construct their team because they have the Green Monster, that big, huge fence out in left field. The Yankees used to build their team, acquire certain players, sort of to mix and match with the dimensions of the stadium. Do you think some teams do it better than others? Because I'm thinking of the Texas Rangers, which Greg just said is, you know, the best hitter's park in baseball. And it always seems like the Texas Rangers always have a tremendous number of power hitters and awful pitchers. Now, that might be just because that when you pitch in Texas, it seems like it you know, screws up your the speed and the action that you get on your pitches. But do you think the Rangers don't understand how to work with their stadiums and the atmospheric effects of their stadiums as well as some of these other teams do?
Well, first of all, Mike, we're exactly on the same wavelength, because I was about to bring up the point of how to construct a team given extreme situations. So we're right there. You know, when you talk about the Texas Rangers, I think what you call bad pitching in the past, a lot of it is just bad defense. They have had horrible defensive teams in the past. And what we've seen this year is that suddenly the ERAs for the pitchers look a lot better. And you could say, oh, wait a minute, they got better pitchers. No, not so much. They still have Kevin Millwood and Vicente Padilla and Brandon McCarthy and all these guys in the starting rotation. It's just that they have a new shortstop named Elvis Andrus, who's one of the best defensive shortstops in all of baseball, just barely over 20 years old, very exciting player. They moved a guy named Michael Young, who was considered a star but a terrible defender, over to third base. That's helped a lot. They've shored up the outfield a little bit, so suddenly it's making a big difference. I think that the issue is you want to try to find power hitters in that ballpark, there's no question, but at the same time, get guys who can make outs, because an amazing thing happens. If you can make outs, suddenly there are fewer opportunities for the other teams to hit home runs. It's only natural.
So your advice to a GM, if you're playing in a park where it's easy to hit a home run, emphasize defense.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't put it quite that way. Exactly what I would say instead is that teams just underestimate defense. And what we saw, again, just to give a plug to the Tampa Bay Rays that I'm covering, they went ahead and they made a big, big difference in defense from 2007 to 2008. They went from the worst team in the American League East to they won the pennant. You look at the Seattle Mariners this year. Yes, they've fallen off recently, but they were just atrociously miserable last season. They make a few upgrades in their outfield, and suddenly some of these starting pitchers, guys like Jared Washburn, who look like mediocre players, all of a sudden they look like stars with these new guys. So I just think the defense in general should be emphasized, because again, if you make outs, it gives the other team fewer chances to score runs. It's really not that complicated, and it's still an undervalued commodity in baseball that all 30 teams could take advantage of, no matter what kind of park they play in.
Well, the Tampa Bay Rays do play in that dome, that quirky dome down there in St. Petersburg, so they have no atmospheric effects. But maybe what we can surmise from this whole discussion is that a special advisor for atmosphere and wind should be at least hired by all the major league teams.
I think you can make that case. And one more point on the Yankees, by the way. If it turns out that this is a home run park, there's a direct way to combat it. I mean, defense is certainly one, but another way to do it is to get sinker ball pitchers. So, for instance, if you can get a guy like Derek Lowe, who's a pretty well-known player, he pitched for the world champion Red Sox and all this stuff, if you can get players of that ilk, ground ball pitchers, Chin Ming Wong, when he's right, by the way, is also a ground ball pitcher, get a bunch of ground ball guys who don't put the ball in the air. In other words, hitters, it's just tough to elevate the ball because it's so low. That's one way to do it. Another way is to go out and get guys who just frankly are big power hitters with maybe limited skills elsewhere. So, you know, a Russell Branyan type, a guy who just swings for the moon every time. Sometimes he makes contact, and when he does, he hits it a long way. Those guys are also undervalued commodities. If the Yankees are smart and this effect turns out to be right, and maybe we'll be sitting here a year or two or three from now and we'll say that, then what they have to do is address that, find the best players for that ballpark, and win games.
All right. I want to thank you, Jonah Carey, who writes for ESPN.com and Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. I want to thank you, Dennis Torok, who is a wind consultant and a manager for Numerical Technologies International, and Greg Rabarchik does Hit Tracker, which is a really cool website. He lives in Portland. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you much.